Well, spring is here. It's the season we normally would see a ramping up of activity coming out of our winter doldrums. And indeed, there is some activity. At this point, the spring election is still happening. And on the ballot in 11 counties of western Wisconsin, people will be voting on a referendum issue that would provide improvements to the campuses of the Chippewa Valley Technical College. Ironically, classes at CVTC are currently suspended, as they are at all other schools in western Wisconsin, due to the worldwide pandemic of the disease COVID-19. It's caused this spring to look like none other in memory, with not only schools but many businesses closed to the public, and more people working from home or out of work altogether. We talk about both topics today on the West Side. Good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Welcome to the West Side on our new day. We're here Fridays from now on, and congratulations on making it to the first day of spring. We'll be joined in a few minutes by the president of Chippewa Valley Technical College, Bruce Barker, to talk about that referendum issue. However, we're going to start the show by talking about pandemic planning in western Wisconsin with WPR reporter Rich Kramer. And as always, your questions and comments are welcome. Call 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. So, Rich Kramer, it seems with this story we just get more news in a day than we'd normally get in a month. Let's go back to the last 24 hours. Governor Evers announced yesterday that Wisconsin had its first two deaths from COVID-19. One was a man in Fond du Lac County in his 50s. The other, a man in Ozaukee County in his 90s. And, Rich, I understand there's an update on that even this morning.
Yeah, I'm seeing some reports out of the Milwaukee area that there is a death in the city, within the city, a gentleman in his 60s. But the reporting that I'm seeing from the Journal Sentinel says that this gentleman was hospitalized for days before passing away.
Now, yesterday it was also a day that four counties in western Wisconsin, Eau Claire, Chippewa, Dunn, and St. Croix, each announced their first confirmed cases of COVID-19. Here in western Wisconsin, we've had relatively few cases of the coronavirus showing up in people as compared to other parts of the country, and none of those four that I mentioned from those local counties, none of those had, all of those had been traveling in some fashion, and the assumption is they probably picked it up in their travels. What does that tell us about what's going on in western Wisconsin and the people you've been talking to?
Well, so what it tells me is that these numbers that we're seeing, the official positives, are not the best indicator of what's actually happening in regards to the virus and its spread. And I say that because this week, earlier this week, it feels like a year ago, but Monday and Tuesday, I was talking with state health officials and looking at hospital systems. And what I learned is that the tests are not easy to come by, and at first, when testing began, once we started getting positives in Wisconsin, when it started ramping up, tests were only being processed by the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene in Madison and the Milwaukee City Health Department, which has its own lab. And since then, I talked with a UW health official on Monday who said they were doing processing, and I'm saying like collecting and then sending off to the lab, 100 tests per day. And the one of the top ranking officials there told me that he would like to do 1,200 a day.
So even if the tests are getting out to people, getting them processed is still a bottleneck.
Oh, big time. And yeah, and on Tuesday, I learned more about what the bottleneck was. At first, it sounded like it's just a huge volume of testing, tests that are coming into a limited number of labs. That is true. But then on Tuesday, we heard from the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene and the state epidemiologist that they were running low on supplies used in processing these tests, and it's supply and demand. So as more and more labs, public and private around the nation, start to ramp up testing, the things that are needed to get results are getting harder to come by. And specifically, what I heard was that reagents were in short supply. And I looked it up. Reagent means it's just a type of chemical that is used in the testing process to kind of force a reaction of some sort. I am not a scientist by any means, but on Tuesday they said because of these shortages, they were prioritizing who is getting or whose tests are being processed. They're prioritizing it so that healthcare workers, for one, are those are prioritized tests. Number two is high risk populations, people that are hospitalized and you know, that could risk spreading it within the hospitals around the state. So they effectively said people who, not everybody needs a test. They said that if you are not in the high-risk population, you probably don't need a test. So I followed up on a statewide conference call by asking, does that mean we're effectively rationing tests? And they said they wouldn't describe it like that. But it definitely seems like there is, you know, because of the shortage, we're not seeing the kind of testing that is taking place, for example, in South Korea, where pretty much anyone has access to it. And this problem, to be clear, is not unique to Western Wisconsin, right. Wisconsin as a whole. It's nationwide.
So what is happening here in Western Wisconsin when it comes to testing?
Well, what I noticed, I just literally went to the, this week I went to, it was 2 days ago. I went to the public, the press conference held at the City County, Eau Claire City County building, Lisa Giese put it on. And on the way there, I noticed that Mayo Clinic had set up a big tent in its parking lot. If you're familiar with Eau Claire, there's a secondary helicopter landing site. It's the parking lot furthest away from the hospital, the old Middle Fort Hospital,
right.
Near downtown.
Oh, Luther Hospital is what we would have called it back in the day.
Luther.
Yeah.
I still am an outsider in some extent. But so they had set up a big tent, and you know, it wasn't being used at that time. But what it is this drive-through testing, and it's kind of a new idea in the U.S., certainly, but it's been used widely in other countries like South Korea. So, and the day before, Mayo started rolling that out in La Crosse at its facility down there. So, and also, I should note that Mayo Clinic, and I think we're going to see more of this. We're starting to see reports of hospital systems that have the capabilities just designing their own test and, you know, making their own tests and processing it in-house because it's quicker than trying to get results through a state lab. So Mayo Clinic said that, this was earlier this week, they said that they had to come up with a test and they had the capability in Rochester of processing up to 400 per day. And that's for Minnesota and Wisconsin. So that's still pretty limited, but mm-hmm. It adds to, and what I've heard from other, you know, state officials, health officials, the FDA is approving as fast as they can more labs to come up with their tests. And, you know, what's interesting is the test is not some simple, like people think of a pregnancy test. It's one and done. This is not. It takes multiple steps, lots of ingredients. The state lab of hygiene official likened it to baking cookies. You need a lot of different ingredients, and without the ingredients, you're not going to get good results. So that's the kind of the FDA is allowing more labs to come up with tests, though they all have to be similar, right? So what I heard is, you know, in the next month or two, they expect the scale of test availability and processing to ramp up a lot. But in the meantime, you know, it could be described as flying blind a bit.
Yeah, so the numbers, we're a big numbers society, and at this point, there's not a way to compare our numbers to someplace that's been doing more testing, for instance.
No,
as far
not
as
at
the
all.
People who have the disease.
And even if we were testing at full capacity, it's important to remember that these positive numbers are lagging indicators, and that's because it takes days to, you know, up to a week, maybe two. I've read different reports. You know, we're learning about this virus as we go to even show symptoms. And then once you show symptoms, it takes a while for it to get bad enough that people will contact a hospital. Then the hospital takes a sample. And if you're in Hayward, Wisconsin, it's going to take that sample a while to get to the state lab of hygiene. They're backed up and only if you're not a high-risk patient, they're not going to process that right away. So it's really, you know, people do like numbers. It gives us some sense of security, and, like, we know we have control maybe, but it's just it's a lagging indicator. So that's why it's so important for people to just, you know, wash your hands ferociously and really take this social distancing seriously.
We're talking to Rich Kramer. He's the reporter, WPR's reporter based in Eau Claire, here on the west side. 2 weeks ago, Rich, the phrases social distancing and community spread were not pieces of everyday conversation. Your normal beat is the Wisconsin higher education system. The events of the past 2 weeks have really been unprecedented when it comes to the colleges and universities in the state.
Yeah, it's really incredible. Higher education is a big beat, and there's a lot of news to cover. But last Monday and Tuesday, it was just insanity for me to try to keep up. What happened was we started seeing colleges or universities like the UW system, you know, UW-Madison in particular. They were the first one to announce, because of the positives that we had seen early on in Madison, Dane County. They were the first to announce that they were going to cancel in-person classes and move learning online. Also, you know, to accommodate that, they were extending spring break. That seems to be the pattern. Extend spring break, give professors a little time to move their classes online. You know, a lot of professors have never done that. And then when students are done with spring break, the extended spring break, they're not coming back to campus. They are staying at their permanent homes if they can, and doing classes online. So UW-Madison was first, then it was UW-Milwaukee, and then it was just this crescendo across the state. So every half hour, another college was announcing similar actions. In Eau Claire and River Falls were actually a day, I believe it was a day later, they made that decision. And in Eau Claire specifically, it was kind of interesting because the day before they announced they were closing, they put out a press release saying they were going to lift the attendance policy. So if you were sick, stay home. You're not going to be punished because of that. You know, you're not going to lose face with your grades or, you know, whatever. But then the very next day, they held a press conference saying that they were suspending in-person classes. So it was the UW system, you know, the big schools down in Madison, Milwaukee first, then it kind of spread around the state. All UW system campuses, two-year and four-year, canceled in-person classes and moved learning online. Then you saw the private schools doing the same thing down in the southeastern part of the state and in Madison. Now it's essentially all higher education. The tech colleges were also a little later to do this than the UW and the private colleges. But now, essentially, all higher education and K-12, for that matter, has been suspended in person, and a lot of that has been moved online to the extent possible.
If you heard our newscast at the top of the hour, you heard Rich's report about gun sales as it relates to the coronavirus pandemic. The response to coronavirus fears has been fascinating in a lot of ways. As you did that story, what was that a story that you came up with, and what got you thinking about that?
Well, I've kind of kept an eye on gun sales in Wisconsin since I was a student reporter at KUWS, the WPR Bureau in Superior.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a hunting and fishing family. I'm familiar with firearms, so I would go to the range from time to time. And in 2008, I remember seeing, when I went to buy some bullets for my, you know, my .22 rifle to go plank some cans, I noticed that the shelves were empty. And that was because, you know, President Obama had been elected and people were nervous, right? So then I started following that. And whenever we would see kind of political calls to restrict gun access, there were big runs on ammunition and certain types of guns. This time, I knew that this would cause the same sort of panic, for lack of better terms, and that people were going to be looking for some sort of sense of security. So I figured last week that we were going to see this, and decided to take a look and call around Wednesday, and then the story kind of came together yesterday. But I got data from the Wisconsin Department of Justice Firearms Unit, which is the state agency responsible for conducting background checks. And as of March 18th, they did 2,171 background checks a day. So to put that in context, on March 8th, there were 450. So that's an increase of 482%, more than 482%. And that's actually right in line with what I heard from gun stores. I tried to call across the state. So I spoke with a gun store owner in Germantown, which is a suburb, northern suburb of Milwaukee. Then I called Marcon Shooting, which is in Lake Halley, and then Superior Shooter Supply up in Superior. And they all reported the same thing. There was a big rush to buy ammunition. It started with calibers that are used for pistols generally, but 9mm, 40 caliber, 45 caliber. And then it also went to what are called 223, which is the ammunition that's used in the AR-15 rifle, which those are kind of the things that sell out quickly whenever there's any sort of sense of panic. But then what I heard and really struck me was the store owner in Superior said that there was a big demand for what are called home defense shotguns. And these are not for hunting. These are short barrels. These are pistol. They have pistol grips. It's for home defense. It's for tactical purposes. And she said that that was strange. She had been through many of these rushes before, but she said this one was strange, and it was it caught her off guard, the interest in home defense. So we've also seen that buckshot, which is a large, you know, pellet type of shotgun shell, has sold out in a lot of places.
Rich, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt, but, you know, people are asking, why is this? A lot of people that are not, you know, they're, whenever you talk about guns, you get strong reactions on social media.
Yeah.
And I've seen people, you know, saying that this is ridiculous. And then some people are saying, you know, we're preparing, et cetera. And what it seems like to me is that people, you know, we're all very anxious about this. And, you know, it seems to me that people are looking for some sense of control, and they think they'll find that with the purchase of firearms. The other thing that's been a little unnerving is that these gun store owners said that people that are buying these things are not regular customers. So they're not people that do sport shooting or target shooting. They're not people that go hunting a lot. These are people that are unfamiliar with guns. And because of the rush, they haven't been able to work with customers to show them how to use it and how to operate it. So that could cause, you know, some situations in the future.
So I know your time is limited and we need to get to our next guest, but you and other reporters are still out there in the field talking to people. What precautions are you taking to do that social distancing we've been asked to do?
Well, basically, we're staying indoors. We're staying, we're doing a lot of interviews by phone, more so. But if we do have to go in the field, personally, I'm just being very conscious about not touching my face and not touching surfaces if I can help it. I get home, I wash my hands, I take my jacket off, I sanitize everything that I touched on the way in the house, and then wash my hands again. But the news department has sent out these 6-foot-long boom poles. I've heard them referred to as fishing poles. But if you've ever seen a big press conference or something in Washington, it's the giant fuzzy mic that's on the stick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what National Public Radio has been using, and that's what we're going to be rolling out too. But I've also been told that, you know, if things get really bad in terms of outbreaks in our communities, that we might just suspend doing in-person interviews. But it's a really interesting balancing act, because we need to be able to get information to the public. So it's all of it, as we all know and can feel in our guts, this is totally uncharted territory.
Yeah. Noah Ovshinsky, our news director, said the covering the news in the last 2 weeks has been like drinking from a fire hose. And Rich Kramer and our entire crew of credible crew of journalists have been doing just that for the past week or so, and putting out information that's timely, reliable, and useful. Thanks for your good work, Rich, and thanks for spending time with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me on to help get information out.
You bet. And a reminder that you can catch all of Wisconsin Public Radio's coverage of COVID-19 by going to WPR.org/COVID. Next up, we're joined by the president of Chippewa Valley Technical College, who will talk about a referendum question on the April 7th ballot that would raise money for campus improvements. Your thoughts or questions on the referendum are welcome. Call 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach. It's the West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back on the West Side, and joining us now by phone is the president of Chippewa Valley Technical College, Bruce Barker. President Barker, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
And sure appreciate your patience as we're trying to catch up on what's happening with the epidemic. But we've got the rest of the hour to talk to you about this referendum that you have coming up. But I did want to check in first. We certainly will get to the referendum in a bit, but let's talk about the effects of COVID-19 pandemic and the effects that it's had on Chippewa Valley Technical College. What measures are your campuses under right now?
Yeah, certainly. Well, this week, actually, we have been on spring break, so it has given us a lot of time to actually take and test our systems remote. Our faculty have been working on doing what you've been saying earlier, putting more and more material online. A lot of our courses were online previous to this. So we are officially closed until March 30th. So we extended our spring break an additional 1 week to give both our students and our faculty and our staff more prep time to adjust to this new strange normal that we have. And we'll be opening up again on March 30th, but that will be to distance ed courses and distance learning only. Our buildings will still be closed at that point. All of our support services, our tutoring services, things like that will be available to our students online. Our professional development services will be available to our faculty and staff. And we're working with our business and industry partners. We do a lot of customized training. And while our facility is closed down, a lot of that can still be done distance learning methods also. So we're going remote like everybody else is at this point.
Well, and for most university-type courses, that works pretty well, but a technical education in many fields of study involves hands-on application. In fact, this referendum we're going to be talking about includes a lot of specialized equipment that people are going to be learning who take the courses there and take the programs there. How do you manage that sort of application while still providing the sort of social distancing being recommended by public health officials?
Right. Well, in situations like this, everybody always wants to know all the answers, and we want to look forward as far as we can, and sometimes that's difficult. So, you know, we have to look at the different sectors. For example, in our health sector, we have over 15 allied health programs, so everything from nursing to radiography to ultrasound to lab techs, and all of those have clinical experiences. They have regularly scheduled times in our health facilities, both clinics, hospitals, long-term care facilities. So we're working on how that can still accomplish, because at some point, you know, we don't want to interrupt the providing of health services, and in some cases, our students can actually help providing those services. So that's a very, very fluid situation. In some other situations, we are trying to move things more on a distance basis. So, for example, our culinary students, rather than coming in our lab, they're coming in and getting their packets of ingredients, and they'll be cooking from home for the next few weeks, probably, instead of cooking into our labs. So every one of our programs is really different, and the deans are working with the faculty and directly with the students on how much we can continue to provide. But you're right. A large portion of ours is the applied education, the hands-on education. Mm-hmm. And so we may have to deal with some delays and some alternate delivery methods.
It's a real test of creativity for administrators and instructors, I'm sure. I've been hearing a lot of tales and kind of heroic ones as well, and I look forward to hearing more about that sort of thing down the line. Let's move now, and we're talking with Bruce Barker. He's the president of the Chippewa Valley Technical College. Let's move to our planned topic of conversation, that $48.8 million referendum issue that will be on the April 7th ballot. The issue will be on the ballot in Eau Claire, Chippewa, Dunn, Pepin, and Pierce counties, as well as portions of St. Croix, Buffalo, Trempealeau, Jackson, Clark, and Taylor counties that are under the Chippewa Valley Technical College umbrella. Before we dive into the specific items this referendum's passage would finance, talk about the process that went into the decision to come to voters with this proposal.
Sure. You know, we do a rolling planning process with our board all the time. So we're always looking 3 to 5 years out, both from a standpoint of our operational costs and directions we should be going with programs, but then also with respect to our capital, our equipment, our facilities, and sometimes our land purchases. So to a certain degree, some of these topics we've been talking about for quite some time, transportation, student housing, things like that, have been a topic of discussion for the last 10 years. You know, I took over as president in 2008, and we've been discussing them periodically ever since then.
Mm-hmm.
On an annual basis, our board always does kind of a deep dive, and we look at our results, but then we also look at what are the community needs. And we were able to do that at our annual retreat last July. And we identified several areas of concern or areas where we thought the college could optimize our resources and help the community. And once we identified those areas, then we wanted to test those theories and see if the community really supported those items. And so then last October, in October, we sent out surveys to well over 20,000 residents throughout our district and asked them how they felt about these different topics. Some topics received a tremendous amount of support, some not so much. So after we got those three survey results back towards the end of the year, the board reviewed those again and then selected certain topics that had strong community support, that the community said, yes, we need to make improvements in these areas. And then that's really what we've been going forward with. We met with our architects and engineers to kind of do a look at what those facilities are like. Certainly not detailed spec drawings. They're not ready for bid yet, but conceptual drawings so that we could go out to the public with an idea. There were several procedural steps our board had to take in December and January just to get things on the ballot and to get things through our state board. But basically, since the end of January, we've been focusing on April 7th as the day for our referendum.
So $48.8 million, pretty eye-opening price tag. Even with the research you've done and the surveys, are you worried that bundling these projects might result in a price tag that scares voters away?
Well, you're always worried about increasing taxes, no matter what. I think one of the things we have to look at is rather than it just being a small school district, like often referendums are a small city or county, we really do have this large district that goes from River Falls to Neillsville, about 180 miles along I-94 corridor. So when we look at that entire area, we have almost $25 billion of equalized value, just under $25 billion. So that $48.8 million really comes down to $13 a year on a $100,000 property. So if your home is worth approximately $100,000, your taxes would only go up $13 a year. And we realize throughout the district some homes are cost a lot more, some cost a lot less, but that $100,000 is an easy index figuring. That really, I think, gives us a more realistic concept of what that tax burden will be. Certainly $48.8 sounds like a lot. $13 a year, $1.08 a month brings that shock value down quite a bit, I think.
Let's dive into the nuts and bolts, or maybe a better way to put it, the brick and mortar of this proposal. Most of the money targeted in the referendum would be in the construction of a new transportation education center on your Eau Claire campus. Most of us have seen truck drivers and behind-the-wheel training from CVTC on the roads of western Wisconsin. What will this new transportation education center do?
Right. Well, a couple things. One, again, when the board was looking at that, we're very aware of new technology that's being introduced. We are a technology college, so whether it's in healthcare, manufacturing, where we're always looking to the future as to how we can introduce new technology. Well, if you think about our transportation area, that has really undergone tremendous change in the last few years, and we know it's going to keep changing and evolving. We've been driving gasoline-powered engine cars for about 100 years now. Now many people are driving hybrids, and more people are moving to electric vehicles. And in the trucking area, where trucking has relied on diesel, now a lot of them are moving to compressed natural gas. Both Quick Trip and Menards fleets are moving towards compressed natural gas. So we have five propulsion systems that we have to teach in the future. That's a lot more difficult than one or two. And those labs that we built back in the 60s simply are undersized and inadequate. We need to upgrade those for the new technology.
Yeah, it's hard. Yep. It's hard to be a shade tree mechanic anymore unless you have a computer hooked up to the tree.
Exactly, exactly. And then, you look at these vehicles, how smart they are. You know, they stay in the lane, they park themselves. I have to admit, I'm one of these people that kind of laughed about driverless vehicles. We all remember last Yep. February in Wisconsin. But I had an opportunity to tour the new Menards Distribution Center here in Eau Claire, and that's about an 80,000-square-foot building. They have over 80 forklifts operating in that building, but no forklift drivers.
Wow.
That entire building is one big grid, you know, with scans and meters up and down, left and right, and the forklifts pick up product by barcode and deliver product by barcode, and there's two IT guys in the back that are basically running that whole operation. So we know electric programmable vehicles are coming our direction, both in manufacturing, the robotics that we see in manufacturing. We see that in ag, maybe on our cars and on the road. But we know we have those smart vehicles here, and that's going to be the way a lot of businesses respond to the labor shortage. And then the other factor that we looked at with transportation is just how much our retail world has changed. 15, 20 years ago, we used to teach window displays in our marketing department. Well, we don't teach window displays anymore because everybody goes online. They click probably Amazon Prime or something like that, and the product is delivered to their doorstep the next day. So our whole retail world is changing. And if you think about how many distribution centers have been built in our area, just in the last few years, that's one of the reasons that we started the supply chain management program a few years ago. That whole retail world is just increasing demand on transportation. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, the post office was talking about closing down or eliminating Saturday deliveries, and now they're delivering packages on Sunday. So we know there's just going to be a huge demand as we convert our transportation systems, but also we know that there are a tremendous amount of workers out there that have to be retrained on the new types of skills that they'll have to have with these new vehicles. So transportation is an exploding area of technology.
Well, in that Transportation Education Center, a lot of it is to take the programs you already have and make and bring them, you know, up to the modern day. But you're actually looking to actually add a new program, right? The Agriculture Service Technician Program. Is this students working at fixing tractors, for instance?
Well, it's actually in some ways. You know, the tractors' engines themselves are often in the diesel category, or now I suppose that could be compressed natural gas in the future. But when you think about, you know, a big combine or any of the other equipment they use, there's a lot of hydraulics. You know, there's a sure. lot of mechanics with the actual harvesting equipment and things like that. So this this position would really look at those type of large agricultural implement.
Right now, your transportation training facilities are on multiple campuses. If this referendum passes and the Transportation Education Center is built, does that mean students from throughout the district will have to come to Eau Claire for that training?
Well, right now, all of our transportation facilities are in Eau Claire.
Right,
they are scattered. We have five programs, and they're actually at six different locations. There's a welding course that all of the programs take that is at that sixth location. So, but by having them all at one location, one, the faculty could certainly collaborate and cover for each other and work together, both on capital and operational ideas. But more importantly, we'd have our students all at one location. And the amount of student support that we could provide, the tutoring services, would certainly be a lot easier. And also, all of these students in these programs have to take some gen eds, you know, the
sure.
communication courses, the math courses, and it would be a lot easier to provide those supplementary courses to them if they were at one location. So we'd gain all kinds of efficiencies. Actually, a couple of our facilities now, our largest facility for diesel truck is a rented facility, so we would actually save some rental dollars by having our own.
Our guest till the top of the hour is Bruce Barker. He's the president of Chippewa Valley Technical College. We're talking about the $48.8 million referendum issue that would fund a number of programs, including the Transportation Education Center we just were talking about. Look at other aspects of the referendum and what it would fund coming up. If you'd like to join the conversation with a question or a comment, we'd enjoy hearing from you. 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. My name's Dean Kallenbach, and you are listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back talking about the referendum coming up on April 7th for 11 counties in western Wisconsin. Those counties will be voting on a $48.8 million referendum issue that would fund campus improvements at Chippewa Valley Technical College. Our guest through the remainder of the hour is Bruce Barker. He's the president of Chippewa Valley Technical College. If you have a question about the referendum or about CVTC in general, you're invited to call us at 800-228-5615. So, President Barker, another aspect of the referendum includes expansion and remodeling of CVTC's Emergency Service Education Center. Talk about that aspect of your school's offerings and what this new addition would mean to training of those students.
Well, our Emergency Service Education Center is out on our West Campus. It was actually built in, it opened in 1999, and it was built based upon a referendum that the college had in 1997. That referendum was for $10.7 million. It passed. We were able to build our Emergency Service Center, our Manufacturing Center, and a building in River Falls. So $10.7 million went a lot farther back 22 years ago.
Yes, it did.
But so that center was built, opened in 1999, and we'd like to make improvements on it and expand upon it. Certainly, we're seeing a lot more violent crimes now, the type of weapons being used. We're seeing a lot more cyber crimes. And so it is really about providing expanded and improved services to our first officers, realizing these first responders, the police, the fire, the paramedics. Boy, these are people that risk their lives to save ours. And times like this, we can certainly realize the importance.
Well, in this setting of the COVID-19 epidemic, we've heard a lot about the need to keep those on the front lines of healthcare safe. A number of this area's paramedics studied at CVTC. Have you or your instructors heard any stories from your graduates about some of the challenges they're facing these days?
Oh, yes. In fact, a lot of the city just hired a whole group of our EMT students the other day. So we constantly hear how important these people are, whether it's stopping violent crimes, whether it's responding to house fires, whether it's the emergency medical services they provide. They constantly are putting their life on the line to help other people. So the new center would actually expand in two or three areas, all related to that. So we do have a firing range now. It's only about 25 yards long, and it works nice for handguns. It doesn't work for rifles or semi-automatic weapons. And so we'd like to build a larger firing range, about 50 yards, and also larger so that we could bring props into it. Because when you do talk to an officer involved, you know it's never a clear shot like a firing range. There's a car involved, someone's getting in a car, out of a car, they're behind a trash can, they're next to the sign. And so we could kind of duplicate those physical aspects in a shooting. It would be larger, so we could use, like I said, larger weapons. The old firing range, then, would really be converted into an area where we would teach better arrest and defense tactics. And when you think about it, our officers have to be trained in hand-to-hand combat. The bad guys have knives, they have guns, they don't want to go to jail. Oftentimes, our officers have to have physically confrontations with them and take them down. Years ago, I was actually the assistant city attorney for the city of Eau Claire, and I was the city prosecutor for about 4 years and got to work directly with the officers. Unfortunately, or fortunately, how you look at it, one of the officers was Bobby Bolton, who the Bolton House is named after, right. and Bobby gave his life in defense of his community. So the more we can do to create real-life situations. There would also be a simulation room. That would be something new in education, but simulation allows us to recreate or create lifelike scenarios so they can role play and practice. And a simulation room would allow a student to be completely surrounded by large screens. And onto those screens, we could project a hostage situation at a local bank. We could project a bar fight. We could project a deserted highway at 2 o'clock in the morning. And then based upon how that officer or that student reacted, that scene could accelerate, could get worse into a shooting situation, or deaccelerate into a, all's calm, let's go home. But we really focus on job competencies, and that is probably the toughest job competency that we teach, firearms. So we'd also have an expanded area there for our paramedics. We don't have a training or a staging area for our paramedics, and so our first responders from a healthcare could work with a better scenario. And we've actually been cooperating at our Emergency Education Center with the City of Eau Claire for quite some time. We share the building. The south end of the building is actually Fire Station Number 9. Mm-hmm. And we've been borrowing some bays from the fire department from the city for about 20 years, sharing room. And as the city expands to the west, they need those bays back. They want to relocate more fire engines and apparatus on the west side. And so we're seeing the need now that we need to build some bays for our fire engines. We have three different fire engines. A beginning fire engine costs around $500,000. So it's not anything you want to leave out in the snow and cold in the winter. And ours actually get used more than what the normal fire departments. If you think about how often they go out, we're actually training every day on our equipment. So the use is a lot more. So expanded services really for police, the fire, and the paramedics would be involved.
President Barker, we have a caller on the line. It's Tom from Menominee. Tom, welcome to the West Side.
Hello, Tom.
Hello. Yeah, I'd like to make a couple of observations about the advantage as a retired person. I've retired now about 5 years, close to 5 years, and I was a technical college instructor at Chippewa Valley Technical College. But going back in history of my background, my mother said to me, she said, "Tom, your choices are pretty clear. You can go over to Oshkosh, become a teacher, or you can go to tech school." Well, I wasn't going to become a teacher. And that was the last thing on my list, was to become a teacher and go to UW-Oshkosh. So I went to tech school, and I fell in love with the curriculum. I fell in love with the teachers, and I was able to really pick up a skill that guided me through my entire life. I ended up at the University of Wisconsin-Stout because I can remember my tech ed instructor said, "When in doubt, go to Stout." So I did that, and I followed my dream to become a manufacturing worker, and I put about a total of probably 6 years in the field in manufacturing. And after that, one day, I got an interest in teaching. There was an opening for a drafting instructor at a college in Fond du Lac, and I started my career working with drafting. And I moved up through the ranks and got a call one day from UW-Stout and did some teaching over there for a number of years, 4 years, and then decided that my interests were more in the hands-on. And I got my hands-on skills from the technical college. I went back to the technical college, and I would have never guessed I became a teacher.
So there you are. It went full circle for you.
In retirement, the future of the technical college is in good hands with an excellent group of faculty over at CVTC. And the thing I want to promote the most is I am a retiree, and I know there are people out there like myself who aren't sure what they want to do with their lives. And this is for the young people coming up. We need apprentices, we need plumbers, we need pipe fitters, we need small engine people. And the small engine program that's going to be in this energy center is going to be one of the finest programs. Now, I'm just going to focus for a minute on small engine.
And, Tom, we're getting close to the end of the program. I would like President Barker to get a chance to respond, if I could. And President Barker, Tom, seems like he's a fan of the technical college system.
You know, he is. And I think the point that Tom also makes there, too, is and one that we always make, is we really are involved with everybody's lives. And one of the statements we make around here is that the quality of life that we are so proud of and benefit from here in the Chippewa Valley and even in the St. Croix Valley is directly dependent upon the quality of education we give here at the CVTC. When you think of your everyday life, the house you woke up in the morning, we probably built it or we've repaired it. Think about that first trip to the bathroom. Think about that first trip to the kitchen, all the plumbing, all the appliances. You know, that's our machinists. That's our welders. When you get out in the car, it starts. Our police, fire, EMTs. When you think about all our health providers, like I said, our nurses, the lab techs, the radiographers, the physical therapists, the people that work in surgery. And then it is all the IT people and the electricians and the journeymen. So it doesn't matter what your business is. We overlap and we connect with every business. And whether it's construction, housing, emergency care, manufacturing, transportation, again, I think the quality of life that we have and enjoy here really is based upon the quality of education we provide at the Tech College.
President Barker, thank you. If people want more information, it's available on your webpage, I assume.
Yes, it is. All kinds of information there.
And that's cvtg.edu, if I'm not mistaken.
CVTC.
CVTC, sorry, .edu. Right.
Right.
I'm glad I asked.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Bruce Barker. Appreciate having you on today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And everybody get out and vote early. Absentee voting.
That's Bruce Barker. He's the president of Chippewa Valley Technical College at cvtc.edu to get more information about the referendum on April 7th. And that is an 11-county area of western Wisconsin. Kate Spranger, our on-air producer today. Next week, we take the temperature of our tourism industry in the wake of the COVID-19 epidemic. I'm Dean Kallenbeck. You've been listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.